Mitzvah Reish Tzadi Aleph, 291. Shelo Lesares Echad Mikol Haminim. That one is not allowed to castrate any type of living creature. Shelo Nesares Echad Mikol Haminim, Lo Adam, Velo Behema, Velo Oaf. One is not allowed to castrate, sterilize a person, an animal, or a bird. What did he leave out?
Fish.
Are you allowed to castrate fish? It's a big shaila. It's a big machlokas voskim, whether in fact you are allowed to castrate fish. Okay, if it ever comes up, so we'll try to figure it out. Lemaisa, but certainly these things one is not allowed to sterilize. Shenemar uvartzechem lo sasu. In your land, you shall not do it. So what is it talking about? Don't do what? So the pasuk just finished off saying, Achar shezachar akasuv, umauch v'chasus v'nasuk v'charus. That something that is squeezed or crushed or pulled out, detached or cut. So all these things are mumin, and they cannot be brought as korbanos. And then the pasuk goes on to say, uva'artzechem lo sasu. Then Shehu Namar Kulo Al Klei Tashmish is talking about the reproductive organs, and then it says Uvartz Amar Vartzachem Losasu. It says, and in your land you shall not do. Uba Perushalav Kolsha Vartzachem Losasu Kilomar Lo Yeosos Be Yisrael. That this should not be done within the Jewish people. In other words, interpret the by itself, Vartzachem Losasu, what does that mean? Doesn't have any clear significance. So from the fact that it just comes after this talking about the defects to reproductive organs means that one should not inflict these defects on any type of creature. O perusho mikol min shebartzechem lo sasu. Or it means that you shall not do it in any type of living creature in your land. V'chol shebartzeinu yichlo ha'adam v'abehema v'chol ba'alechayim. So people are not included in this list, right? It's talking about korbanos. So you might think that it's just talking about animals. So the pasuk uva artzechem lo sasu comes to tell you that any creature that happens to be found within your land, that the living creature, so you're not allowed to sterilize or castrate, inflict any of these types of injuries on the living creature.
What about
artzechem?
Does it mean
an eretz Yisrael? Oh, it's about to say that. Good question. Vein inyan akosuv lo ma'ashli yisra asiros. You might think that the Torah means that you just are not allowed to do this within Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says explicitly, Masechet Shabbos, that doesn't mean only in Eretz Yisrael. It just means that any creature, including people, you're not allowed to inflict these types of injuries. That God created the world in a certain way. So that God made it exactly the way he wanted. What does God say in the first beginning of Sefer Bereishis, right in the beginning of the Torah? He says not only to people, but he says it to animals also. So God wants animals to have the capacity to have offspring. And for humans, there's a specific commandment, at least to the males, that one is required to have children. So you see that interfering with this is against God's designs with the world. So if this weren't the case, then people might decide, well, I don't want to have children. They're annoying, and they're a burden, and they cost a lot of money. So I'm not interested, and the animals too. Like, maybe we'd rather just go frolic in the meadows instead of tending to our young. So that's not right, that they're supposed to have children. Alkin b'mafsid klei azera mara b'nafsho k'mishu kotz b'maisa abore v'rotzel b'hashkasa solamo atov. That if you inflict sterilization on any type of creature, it looks like you don't want the world to continue as is. If you went and sterilized all the cats, that means that you don't want any more cats in the world. So that what would be a world without cats? That would be terrible. So that's not good. Even though it's impossible for one person to destroy an entire population this way, basically, almost impossible. Nevertheless, this doing it to one is as if you're showing your demonstration. You're demonstrating that it is in fact something in your mind that you don't want the world to continue as God intended it to continue with all these creatures within.
So mosquitoes aren't a problem, hopefully, right now.
I hope not. Oh, they're not sterilize mosquitoes. Just kill them.
No, no, no. Actually, what they do is they release, sterile males or something like that into populations of insects, which end up going, basically, you know, reducing the chances of the females getting, getting fertilized to the point where, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, right.
Did not know that. Okay. But it's presumably insects are not included in this.
Okay, well,
but yeah, in general. But anyway, it's goyim, but they're doing it.
Because it seems that it requires an act of sterilization, some cutting an organ or whatever.
Yeah.
This mostly involves animals. It doesn't involve creatures where sterilization is chemical.
That's true. Chemical sterilization is also more cal. So if you're doing that to the... If somehow you're playing with the... males of mosquitoes that you're sterilizing them by chemicals, so it's
or
all
irradiate them or something like that.
Right. So that's better. We'll get to that in a minute. Midine ha-mitzvah, the halachas are as follows. Masha amr zichrono levracha, sha'afilu lomar legoy lesaris behema shel Yisrael, asur. So sometimes you might have an ox, and the ox is getting too feisty, and it's hard to deal with. You want it to just be calm and plow. You don't want it getting into fights with anything, so you want to sterilize it. So you're not allowed to do that.
In farming, most of the animals are raised for meat.
Mm.
Right? So the farmers keep only one ox, which is a reproduction. Reproduction, and nowadays not even that because there is artificial insemination.
Mm.
But usually you need one ox because one ox is really aggressive, right? The male ox is very aggressive, and the rest are raised for meat.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually makes them fatter if you sterilize them and less aggressive. So that's what's going on in farming. That's the main thing in farming. Most of the male...
But that's the goyim are doing it by themselves, so that's okay.
Well, those are steers. Obviously, almost all kosher meat, in fact, is from steers.
It's not from cows? Also? I thought it was both, no?
No, actually, what they tend to do is... I've told you, they tend to use... They don't just get the best value out of it. After all the trouble of shechita, they get... You know, like large, they want to get the largest animal and and the best quality meat. So those are actually steers. They're castrated by the guy.
Right, and they're not even owned by the Jew at the time. The slaughterhouse is going to buy the animals from the farmers.
Yeah, right.
Nothing to do with the Jewish animals. Avayim lekocha goy me'atzma v'siras osa muta lekocha miyado v'lechol osa. That even if, first of all, so you're not allowed to ask the goy directly to castrate your animal, but even if the goy took your animal while it was under your ownership and castrated it and returned it unprompted, the goy thinking, oh, I know my friend the Jew, he's not allowed to castrate his animals. That's pretty silly. But, you know, I want to do him a favor. And, you know, I want to make him some steers or capons or any of these more delicious animals.
House cats or something, right?
Okay, right. So I'm going to go ahead and, you know, while he's on vacation, I'm going to sneak into his house and I'm going to castrate his animals. So then you're allowed to do it. You're allowed to derive benefit from this animal. If the Jew says in front of his goyish neighbor, "Now I'm going on vacation, and you know, I just love capon. Capon is my favorite type of meat, and you know, I have these roosters sitting in my coop, and you know, I'm going on vacation now, so you know." I was like, I get it. This is like when you come to me on Shabbos and you say, oh, it's too dark in my house. You know, I have to... Okay, so he gets it and he sterilized the animal, so then that's no good. People who play tricks, they're considered to be low grade. So then... If that's the case, then you are not allowed to derive benefit from this animal, and you must sell it you can sell it even to another Jew. Even to a child who is an adult. It's not the it's asur bahanah. You're not even allowed to be paid for it. You're allowed to be paid for it, but you're just not allowed to use the actual animal itself because it's the assumption being that when you want an animal castrated, it's not for the sale value. It's because you want to either to plow with it or to eat it. It's something to use it for yourself. So therefore, I'll be allowed to do this. I'll leave no katan eino mochra velo nosna. But you're not allowed to give or sell it to a young child. Either under the age of bar mitzvah or so if there's not financially independent yet, because something that belongs to a young child is as if it belongs to the father. The child doesn't have its own financial independence. So therefore, if it owns the animal, basically you're going to be able to use the animal as you please. So that wouldn't have the desired effect. Umajamru gam kein sham besaris achar hamesaris chayev. That if you castrate a second time, so you're chayev. What do you mean? You castrate it once. It's not, what are you talking about? When we talk about menachos, they have to be matzah. The meal offerings have to be matzah. So if you put in more sourdough to make it more chametzik, you might think, once it's chametzik already, so that's it. So either you put in more sourdough to make it more chametzik, according to some opinions, or that you do a different stage of the processing of the mincha as it's chametz. So then you're chayev. They are liable, even though it's the dough is already chametz. Shenamar lo se'afei chametz, it shall not be baked chametz. Lo se'ase chametz, not be made chametz. So these two different lashonos that talk about how you're not allowed to make the menachos chametz imply that even if it's the dough is already chametz, and if you do another stage chametz, so then that's also a no good, and you're chayev. You'd be liable for the penalty of malchus. The mesari sachar mesari shu chayev. So same thing too, that if you are the second castrator, so you're also liable for the punishment. Shenemar umauch v'chasus v'nasuk v'charus. The pasuk says, describing the blemishes, it says squeezed or crushed or detached or cut. V'imal karus chayav al nasuk lo chol shechein. That if it's merely cut, so certainly if it's completely detached from the body, so that is certainly liable as well. Ela lahavi nosek achar koreshu chayav. So if you detach after cutting, then you would be liable. Ketzad harishe ba'echad v'choras hagid, that if you, somebody chopped off the penis, uva acher v'choras habetzim, and then you have another one, someone else comes and you cut off the testicles, onitkan, or you detach them from the body, chayev gamo acheron, even though you're not affecting the reproductive capacity of this creature, nevertheless, it's a gzeres hakasuv that any person who does another stage of removing or destroying the reproductive organs, so then you would be chayev. Cheni bo'echad u'mo'aches agid, the same thing too. If you crushed u'va'acher v'nikon kulan, then you take out the whole reproductive system. Alokin, they're both receive the penalty of lashes. Alav v'isho acher and eno mesari shekvar mesorah. So even though the second one, he can't have children as it is. So what difference does it make if you uproot another part of the body? It doesn't make a matter. Nevertheless, it's there is a cost of that you are chayev. So just in a modern example, if you have someone, a man who has a vasectomy, so that alpidin is xeros. If a orthodox urologist would not be allowed to perform vasectomies. Something to keep in mind if you're interested in going into urology. But let's say someone has a vasectomy, and then somehow later in life, the testicle was removed somehow. So then that would be serous, and that would be still usur. Again, if it's pigul nefesh or something, then it's allowed. But if somebody just said, what's the difference? What difference does it make? Let's chop it off or pull it off. So then that would be usur mi deoraisa. So we're talking about all these words in the pasuk are all talking about male reproductive organs. So what about female reproductive organs? So females are harder to sterilize because their reproductive organs are internal. So you're much more likely to come to greater damage, whereas for males you can have a clean cut on the outside and not affect any of the internal organs. So bein ba'adam bein b'shar minim pater. According to the Sefer HaChinuch, everybody agrees to this. You're exempt from punishment if you somehow affect the reproductive organs of a female, whether a person or an animal. So what does it mean, putter?
Putter means not have to bring carbon, that's what it means.
Right, or get the penalty of lashes. In this case, you wouldn't get the penalty of lashes. But does that mean that being misares, a female, is only us or mid the rabbanan? So a lot of poskim say yes, that mid the raisa, it's only talking about castrating, sterilizing a male, but sterilizing a female is only us or mid the rabbanan. The Vilna Gaon disagrees with this, by the way. The Vilna Gaon says no, it's still us or mid the raisa, but for some reason you don't receive the penalties. That's a bit hard to understand why that should be the case. If it's us or mid the raisa, you should be. No, it's not explicit in the pasuk, so you don't receive the penalty. Okay. Whatever it is, it's still us, sir. We can have to discuss exactly on what level. Umasha Amru, yeah?
A question about giving such an animal to another Jew.
Yeah.
Is it the Reis or the Rabbanan? Like,
that's the Rabbanan.
Because it's not clear when yeah. I was writing what is
the... No, that's the Rabbanan. That's the Rabbanan. The only thing that's Asar Midaraisa is the actual act of cutting the organs. Everything after that is only the Rabbanan. Umasha Amru Shamashke Ikrin La Adam Olishar Habrios Kedela Sarsan Asar Aval Ein Lokin Alze. There's something that the Gemara mentions, Koshel Ikrin, which is a potion made of certain roots. The Gemara gives a recipe for it. But Ikrin is also, it's interesting, the Lashon of Akara, Akar, meaning someone who's sterile, can't have children. Okay, just an interesting parallel. So the Gemara mentions in Masechah Shabbos something called Koshel Ikrin. So if you drink this, again, if you discover this nowadays, you reconstructed the Gemara's recipe and it actually worked, you know, you would be an instant billionaire that, you know, easy, no surgery. You drink this potion and you're set for life. You can no longer have any children.
We have chemical, there is chemical testing.
Yeah, in fact, there's a...
Right, but this is...
I think silver iodide or something like that, which gets sort of squirted into the fallopian tubes, causes them to, you know, scar and to, you know, to close up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, right. So, you know, it's in gels that they, you know, they do that with. Not surgical exactly, but...
Interesting. Interesting, so that might also fall in the... But here we're talking about a chemical castration has a lot of side effects. We're talking about, this is a potion that supposedly, you drink it, it's just like medicine, you drink it and, you know, you wake up the next morning and, no more...
What does the Gemara say it's made of, in fact?
It gives a few different spices,
tail
yeah.
Tail of dragon, tooth of wolf, which is mummy, bone, gold.
It lists a certain things, I don't know
sure
if we know the exact
translation. It works as well as all the other remedies in the Gemara, right, you know?
Well, I mean... There is a case in the Gemara. Oh, we'll discuss it. We'll discuss in a second where somebody actually used it. It was very interesting. Okay. Aval ein lokin alza. You don't receive the penalty of lashes. V'chein ha-moshiv chaver ba-mayim o ba-sheleg ashe yivtal mimenu koach ivar yazera ein oloke ashe yisaris ba-yad. So let's say you take someone and you throw them into freezing cold water. So it goes for so long that their reproductive organs shrivel up and don't they can't function anymore. They freeze to death, basically. So there, you don't receive the penalty of lashes. The only penalty of lashes, midaraisa, for castrating someone, only applies to an actual surgical procedure. The Gemara says also that if you remove the, you know, what's it called on a rooster?
No,
thing on the head?
Comb,
yeah. Thing of the comb of the rooster. So the Gemara discusses whether that's a violation of the prohibition of Sirus. Comb of the rooster. So it's not going to have offspring anymore after you remove its comb. So the Gemara says is that considered Sirus Bayad, or is that considered an indirect type of Sirus? So the Gemara says, no, that has nothing to do with Sirus. It doesn't affect the physical capability of the male to produce offspring. It's just without the comb, it's going to be so embarrassed at its appearance that it's not going to... So that's something like that. So that would not be Asar Midaraisa. Well, here it says even Asar Midarabanan, because nothing doesn't affect the reproductive organs at all, technically. Avaroi lahakoso makas mardos. But nevertheless, if somebody does these indirect type of castrations, then we should inflict the penalty of makas mardos, the rabbinical type of lashes, in order to make sure that people don't do these things, which are really bad things to do. V'isha muteres lishtos kos ikrin shemesarsin osa kedei shelo teled. A woman is allowed to drink this potion that prevents her from ever having children in the future. Shanoshim einon mitzuvos alperia verivya kemoshekasafti b'mitzvah rishona shebasefer. That women are not obligated regarding the mitzvah of reproducing. So think about it. The way we were understanding is women are only forbidden to castrate midarabanan, and this potion is only forbidden to use midarabanan. So here you have a case of two darabanans, seemingly. So since it's a potion and it's a woman. So the Chazal were never gozer in such a situation. They never imposed the rule, since it's so far away from the mitzvah deraisa. So they never imposed such a rule. So therefore, a woman is allowed to take such a potion in order to prevent herself from becoming pregnant in the future. For a man, it's really usur, not because of the intrinsic din of Sirus, which is only, again, midaraisa if you actually cause physical damage. But for a man, you have another consideration, which is that he's obligated in the mitzvah of perivirivya. So even if he doesn't violate this, if drinking this potion can prevent himself from being able to fulfill the mitzvah, and even if he already has a boy and a girl, So there's a mitzvah of Lera Valtana Chidecha, the more the merrier. So you can't go ahead and prevent yourself from being able to be Mekayim the mitzvah. That's certainly not allowed. But a woman, if she wants, she's allowed to drink this. But if you hold that women is deraisa, you're just not punished, and drinking the potion is deraisa, you're just not punished. So it's hard to understand why a woman would be allowed to drink this potion, or that she shouldn't become pregnant in the future.
So people who object to birth control pills are taking that second route?
No, birth control pills are mutter. Birth control pills are mutter.
Everybody agrees.
It has nothing to do with the issur of serus. Birth control pills might be usur because the couple together, because the man is involved, has the mitzvah pruervu, so you're not allowed to undermine the capability to fulfill that mitzvah. That's the reason, yeah. But there are situations where birth control pills are mutter. I mean, different poskim have different policies. Poskim say never, unless you know there's a real threat to the woman's health. You cannot allow to use birth control. It's against the Torah's hashkafa is as many children as possible. So doing anything against that is a problem. Where the other poskim say realistic, people have to realize how much they can handle. In the times of the Gemara, you know, children will be born 2 years and 9 months apart. Because they would nurse for 2 years, 9 months of pregnancy, then they would nurse for 2 full years, and then they wouldn't even start thinking about getting pregnant until after that time. They couldn't. They couldn't get pregnant. They nursed sufficiently for the 2 years. It might not happen right away, so maybe it was 3 years, maybe it was 4 years apart. So it wasn't so close together the way we have it nowadays. So, you know, other poskim would say, so nurse for longer if you want to prevent pregnancy. Most poskim allow spacing children in order to make sure that the mental health of the parents is not compromised. Again, but it depends on each individual situation. You can't give a blanket rule about such a thing.
So, if you want to get yourself a cat,
yeah,
right, the female cat obviously less problematic than a male one, right?
But it's still not allowed, but yeah. A Jew is not allowed to be Masaris.
Okay, okay. Yeah. But then,
if you want to feed it a potion so it shouldn't become pregnant, then it's allowed.
So
yeah.
If you have a cat, if you have a female cat that is, you know, that has not been neutered, there's nothing you can do at all. In other words, the boyish of, you know, vet.
Correct.
All right.
You should buy one that's already sterilized. Yeah.
Yeah, or there are actually birth control pills for cats as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Well, that's annoying. You have to make sure it takes that correct intervals.
Every kid, because cats are very, you know, sexy.
Well, no,
but
really,
it did work for, my parents had cats, and that's how they did it.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You know, they have people have them. You know, the injections are a little thing, or the things they put under the skin. They have like a long
Right. So Depo Provera, yeah. They have a 3-year birth control shot.
Yeah. For a cat, so, you know.
So that would be mutter. That's under their mutter,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Keep that in mind. Or catch a little up to 120.
So the story is told in the Gemara, a very interesting story, that Reb Chiya's wife had extraordinarily difficult labor. I remember there were no pain medications available for labor besides, you know, a good shot of whiskey at this time. But women were always in some sort of discomfort. Not always. I mean, you hear stories about women who have no discomfort in labor, but it's very rare. Women were generally in some sort of discomfort during their labor, but she had extraordinarily difficult, unbelievably, you know, terribly painful labor. So she disguised herself, and she went in front of her husband, Reb Chiya. So during Reb Chiya's hours where he was taking shilas from the public, so she disguised herself, she went in front of Reb Chiya, she said, is a woman obligated in Piriv Rivya? So he said, no, woman's not chayiv in Perev Rivya. So she says, okay. So she leaves and she drinks the potion, the koshel ikrin, to prevent herself from ever getting pregnant again. So afterwards, Reb Chiya discovered this, that it was his psak that caused his wife to drink koshel ikrin. So he was very distressed. He said, no, I wanted to have more children, but, what happened? Okay, so it's an interesting story. Some poskim say that if it's deraisa, so maybe it's only in such a situation where it's going to be terribly painful. Otherwise, a born woman might get ill, that she would be allowed to drink koshel ikrin, since it's a less high level of deraisa, because no surgery is involved. But again, the simple understanding is that it's not deraisa, yeah?
You know, the
nowadays, which was not in the time of Reb Chiya and his wife, which is now, in the olden days, if Reb Chiya really wanted to have more children, he was so upset about his wife having gone and done this, he could have married a second wife. Which is, nowadays, this is not an option, so it's not so pushy that the woman would be allowed to do this, certainly before, you know, they were having all the children that they were planning to have, either, certainly, not before a boy and a girl, but, yeah. I mean, nowadays it's not really shaykh anyway because of the lack of the potion. But again, even though a woman is not technically required to, in the mitzvah of Piriv Rivia, the contemporary marriage contract goes two ways. The husband promises the wife, based on the Takanos Rabbeinu Gershom, that he's not going to marry a second wife. And on the other hand, the wife says, well, if you have no other options, so I agree to assist you in fulfilling your mitzvah of Piriv Rivia. I'm going to have your children. So, yeah, so this would not be so pasha nowadays. V'yeser pratea mevar b'makomos m'secha Shabbos u'bimamos. It's found in places in Masecha Shabbos and Masecha Yevamos. Why is it found in Masecha Shabbos? Yevamos talks about all the birth control stuff. Why is it found in Masecha Shabbos? It talks about whether you're allowed to drink this potion on Shabbos or whether it constitutes the prohibition of refuah. The Mishnah says that, you're not allowed to take medications on Shabbos unless one is very ill. But you're allowed to drink things that are normal beverages, even if your intention is that they should cause some sort of refuah. So, for example, if you're having stomach problems, you're allowed to drink ginger tea, because ginger tea is a normal beverage. Even though it's going to help you with your stomach problems, you're allowed to drink the ginger tea. So the Mishnah says you're not allowed to drink kosher ikrin on Shabbos, and it goes hard. It's applicable in all places and times. V'zachar munikevos. For males and females, she'asur gam lahen lesaris hazcharim. It doesn't mean that women are biblically prohibited from being mesaris themselves, as we discussed before, but they are not allowed to perform sirus on a male. So a female urologist is not allowed to perform a vasectomy. Avalo atzman b'chos ikrin k'mal shemana, but they are allowed to sterilize themselves with a potion, as we said. V'over aleha b'siris echa b'chol minei balichayim, if you violated this and you sterilized any of God's creatures, bein adam, bein behem of oaf, whether person or animal or bird, bein tahorim, bein tameim, whether it happens to be a kosher animal or not a kosher animal, loka, you receive the penalty of lashes. It's absolutely biblically prohibited. Which is why also, this is why I told you the story that there was a potential convert who was a veterinarian. So Rav Shechter Paskin that she cannot become a Gioris. She's not going to become a convert because unless she left the veterinary field, because the main parnasa of veterinarians is through performing spaying, neutering, sterilization procedures on animals. So they have a rule that if a convert, you know, sort of beshita doesn't accept a rule of the Torah, even if you can't accept the convert who says, you know, I'm gonna convert, and you know, I believe in the whole Torah, but nevertheless, I'm gonna do this anyway. That doesn't work. This is a pashut iser that nobody ever doubted. It's not like, you know, you are allowed to accept the convert pashtus if there's a community where the women in the community don't cover their hair, for example. So the woman female convert wants to convert in this community. So she says, "What do you mean? What hair covering? You know, the Rebbetzin of my shul doesn't cover her hair. So why should I cover? I'm not going to cover my hair once I convert." So that's a little bit more subjective, but here, this is not subjective at all. This is something that all Jews agree to. Yeah.
Did she end up converting, or
what? The veterinarian?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the case personally. I just heard it third hand. But as far as I'm aware, she did not convert.
Well,
as long as
she her profession, she cannot convert. It's not even the rabbanon.
Correct.
Oh,
yeah.
Not a partnership with somebody else. And, like veterinary we use, it's a Jewish guy married to a non-Jewish woman. You know, they just put things up.
but my understanding is that...
I doubt he cares enough about those.
Right, I understand. But my understanding is that the main parnasa of a veterinarian is performing these procedures. So if you have a practice where you're going to treat the... You're going to treat the colds of the animal, and somebody else is going to do the serum, so you're going to split the profits 90-10. It's not going to be a very equitable distribution. Okay. And Achanami, if she really sincerely pledged never to do this, then she wouldn't have much work as a veterinarian, but she'd be allowed to convert. Okay. Mitzvah Reish Tzadi Beis, too, she could be a Noahide. Mitzvah Reish Tzadi Beis, 292, Shelo Hakriv Korban Baal Mum Miyad Hagoyim. We were talking before this Sirus discussion, as to the requirement that Korban not have any blemishes. Shalhakrav korban bal mum bali mumen miyad hagoyim, not to offer up a goyishuk sacrifice that has a blemish. Shenemar miyad ben nechar lo sakrivu as lechem elokecha mikol eile, even from non-Jews, foreigners, you shall not offer up korbanos to your God from all these types of blemishes. Shenemar achar shehu goy nakriv ba'ado bal mum. Since he's not Jewish, so he's not obligated in the mitzvah, so let's take his korban, and even if it has a mum, so you're allowed to offer it on the mizbech. The Torah says that a non-Jew is allowed to volunteer a korban for the Beis HaMikdash. Why does it say ish ish? Each man, each person. That they're allowed to offer voluntary korbanos. They're not allowed to offer what would, for a Jew, would be obligatory korbanos. So if a goyish woman comes to the Beis HaMikdash and she brings a korban and she says, I just had a baby, I want to bring my chatos. So you don't accept it from her, but you are allowed to accept the voluntary offerings from the for the Beis HaMikdash from non-Jews.
Just one of the Gemaras of Tisha
B'Av. Oh, uh-huh.
About whatever, somebody who made mum on the korban of the emperor.
Yeah, Kamsa and Bar Kamsa.
There was a whole discussion of the rabbeim whether to bring it or not to bring it, and they tried to pass the chumra and brought the destruction according to the
correct. Story. Bar Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. That Bar Kamsa was so upset at being kicked out of the party that he went to Rome and he convinced the Roman emperor to send a korban to the Beis HaMikdash. He said, the Jews are rebelling against you. You send them a korban and see what they do with it. So the emperor sent him, was sent with him. Oh, that wasn't smart. Sending with this messenger that said that the Jews are rebelling against you, there might be no good. Nevertheless, he sent with Bar Kamsa a beautiful korban for the Beis HaMikdash, and on the way, Bar Kamsa made a little nick in its lip or in its eye. It's not exactly clear. So they got to the Beis HaMikdash and they said, this is from the emperor, offer it as a korban. And some of the chachamim said, you know, we better offer this on the Beis HaMikdash. Then Rabbi Zecharia said, you know, well, how can you do that? People will think that you're allowed to, Goy is allowed to bring a blemished korban on the Beis HaMikdash. It's going to be a bad precedent for the future. So anyway, that you're right. So that says that the being too machmir ended up causing the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. So you might think, oh, it's going to explain later. Okay, Mishor Shia Mitzvah Kvod Habayis Uchmoshi Kasafti Belav Chafalav Beseder Zeh. This is part of the honor of the Beis HaMikdash. You have to bring only korbanos that are blemish free, even if they have a goyish origin. Midini Amitzvah Masha Amr Zichron Levracha Shekol Mum Shel Min Hamum and Aposim Bekorbanos. You know, anything by a Yiddish korban that passes it also blemishes, also passes by a goyish korban. Kiyon Hashivim Ushol Shemum Hayaduim Poslim Gam. The 73 types of mumen that we didn't mention all of them, but we've mentioned the categories before. So what's the point of this mitzvah? You might think it's obvious. A korban is a korban. If you're offering it at the Beis HaMikdash, so it has to fulfill all the laws. So you think, no, maybe goyim have a different standard for what they consider to be a proper korban or not. So for a goyish animal, when they're offering to their other deities, for example, also, or if they're offering on a private mizbeach to God, which is also mutter. Jews are not allowed to have not anymore allowed to have a private altar to offer korbanos, but non-Jews are allowed. That's why there's a funny story that I think there was a discussion between Rabbi Pinkus and Rav Shalom Shvadron, who were two different, a little bit of different generations, but they were big Musar personalities in Eretz Yisrael. But they were big Musar personalities, and apparently they were once having a discussion, and one said to the other, "Nu, what if you discovered somehow, you looked in your genealogical records, and you discovered that your mother's 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 mother was really not Jewish? What would you do?" So one of the person who's asked the question responded, "What do you mean? I would pick up. I would go to Beis Din, and that very day I would convert. I wouldn't want to spend another second as a goy." So the person asked the question said, "No, you have it wrong. What would I do if this happened to me? I would build the Mizbeach, offer a korban, and then I would go to the Beis Din to convert. Okay.
Not in a pork shop first. That'd be the
usual. That was, yeah, that wasn't on their minds, but I think for most people, yes. You would want, you would have a little tour of France, and you go to all the fancy restaurants, and then after a couple months, you know, you'd come back. But yeah, this was when you have a big rabbanim, this was not on their minds. Uksas yeser protea. That's the only opportunity you have to offer a korban nowadays if you're a goy. So you have to take advantage. You don't have to take advantage, but you could take advantage. Uksas yeser protea mifuzarim imekomos meha Talmud, and the details are interspersed in the Talmud. Benoiges bechohanim uvizman shiyisrael shurin al masam by the kohanim ki azu uzman hahakrava. If the Kohen offered up the korban, then he would receive the penalty of lashes. The goy wouldn't receive the penalty of lashes. He did nothing wrong. He thought he was bringing a perfectly good thing. And then the OCD Jews are examining the korban and saying, not exactly. There's a nick in the lip over here, so we can't have it as a korban. So he did nothing wrong. He brought it to the base of Mikdash. He thought it was perfectly fine. And that was the Kohen who is subject to the penalty.
Wait, there's no such thing as a penalty for goyim, is there?
No, but you could say the question is whose responsibility is it?
Oh, okay, right.
That's all. Whether it's the person bringing it or the goyim. The commentators on the Sefer Chinuch point out that there is a situation where even a Yisrael could potentially violate this prohibition. What is that? We know that the one avoda that a non-Kohen is allowed to perform at the Beis Hamikdash is Shechita. So if, for some reason, a non-Kohen was designated to perform the Shechita on this animal that had a mum that was brought from the Goyim, then he could also violate this prohibition. The Sefer Chinuch doesn't mention the Yisrael, because in the vast majority of cases, it's not going to be Yisrael doing this.
So in case of Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa, it's basically this gets would have been trapped by the danger to the Jewish people, right?
Right. Pigoch Nefesh, yeah.
Pigoch Nefesh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But still, you don't want to set a precedent. That was his consideration. He said, we're not gonna let God take care of it, we're not gonna do this right now. Sefer, the Minchas Chinuch also suggests that maybe the reason is that maybe if you want to read into this a lot, that's only Kohanim or Chayev, so maybe you're not Chayev on the Shechita, you're only chayav on the sprinkling of the blood or the other types of avodos of the korban, not the shechita at all.
Yeah, Bar Kamtsa is liable for creating mum in the first place. That would be
correct.
That would be different.
Right, he wasn't the best guy, Bar Kamtsa. Fine. Mitzvah Reish Sadi Gimel, 293. Mitzvah Sakorban Shia Mishmone Yamim Ulemala. That the korban has to be at least 8 days old before it's bris. No, but the same idea. Shia Kol Korban Shinakri Min HaBehima Mi Ben Shmonas Yamim Ulemala. It should be at least 8 days old. Lo Pachos Mizeh. Vezosi Mitzvah Mechusar Zman Begufo. This is called Mechusar Zman, that is before the proper time. We know this from Yantif, the famous Yantif laning. That's what it starts. That 7 days it should be with its mother. From the eighth day, it could be accepted as a korban. It just alludes to the fact that beforehand it's not acceptable as a korban. That even though that you could imply here a negative prohibition, that you're not allowed to offer an animal as a korban before the eighth day. Nevertheless, Chazal tell us that when a negative prohibition is formulated with the language of a requirement, a positive commandment, then it has the status of a positive commandment, even though you sort of treat it in terms of the way it's observed as a negative commandment. Therefore, it doesn't have the penalty of lashes because it's treated like a positive commandment.
Moshe
Hanach l'mechusar zman shekosuv nitko la'asei. So the pasuk attached it to a mitzvah saseh, that it should be with its mother for 7 days, and then on the eighth day it could be a korban. So the prohibition of offering a animal before the eighth day was included in this type in this statement. So therefore, there's no penalty of malchus. Mishor she mitzvah ki mashik damnu binyan a korban al tzad pshat. That when you think about the korban, it's going to inspire you to act properly. That you want the animal that you bring as a korban to be as inspirational as possible. Before the eighth day, it's a shvach animal. You're not going to use the animal for anything before the eighth day. If you you can find videos, I'm sure, online of very young animals, they're kind of wobbly and thin, and you know they're not so pleasing to look at. So if you offer this tiny little animal that can barely walk by itself, then it's not going to have the proper impact on you in terms of the tshuva that you want the korban to inspire. Midine ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah as follows. Ma'asham zichron levracha, shetorim shelo higi azmanon, shehin asurin lekorban kemo behema shelo higi azmanon. So turtle doves have the same restriction. V'chein b'nei yona gedolim arbe asurim. But for doves, then it's sort of the opposite, that if they're too big, they're too old, then it's not going to be a problem. V'atam b'zeh shagadluz b'hem nechshav kemum. When they're too old, then that's considered to be like a blemish. But derech klal amr zichron l'bracha b'mishna b'torim uvneyona shetchilas atziuv shebezeh v'shebezeh pasul. The beginning of the yellowing, the feathers around the neck, is both pasul. V'yishugadlus b'yonim v'katanus b'torim. So turtle doves, it's a sign of being too young, and it's a sign of being too old for doves. V'darshu zichron l'bracha, pigeons, sorry. Darshu zichron levracha bezeh hamikra ki yivaleid prat liyotzei dofen shepasul lekorban. So why does it say ki yivaleid, that an animal once it's born will be accepted as a korban? That seems extraneous. Obviously, the animal has to be born before it can be accepted as a korban. Answer: as we mentioned this before, that an animal that was born by a C-section is not acceptable as a korban. That's one of the mumen that's considered to be a blemish for animals, but not for humans. If a kohen was born by a C-section, he's perfectly allowed to perform the worship in the Beis HaMikdash. But if an animal was born by C-section, is not allowed to be a korban. It has to be born in the natural way in order to be accepted as a korban.
I mean, that's What effects does it have on the animal itself? I mean, it's indistinguishable from any other animal. It's like,
So is a bechor that's born by C-section, nevertheless, he's
yes, but there, the bechor, an ikur of a bechor is, in fact, being the first one that is born. I mean, here you're talking about the animal itself. A mum is something...
It's not a mum, so don't think of it as a mum. Think of it as a separate halacha. That's the way it has to be for an animal that's brought in the Beis HaMikdash.
It's very interesting because, really... In terms of farming, right?
Yeah.
C-sections on animals, they started to perform only in 1940s. So how, it's very interesting that the
separate... In 1940s, okay.
Writes about C-sections for animals, where for a farmer, if an animal cannot give birth, the accepted practice was to slaughter the animal and use it for meat.
You mean while it was in labor?
While it was in labor. Oh. While it cannot give birth. Like, the different things, like twisted uterus, for example. They cannot give birth. So the animal would be slaughtered. It would not be like right now, there would be C-section for the animal.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time,
if they had like, an animal, like it was a calf, cows having trouble delivering the calf, they'd say, okay, well, they just do a C-section, which would, kill the mother, maybe, but it would work to get the calf out, certainly, okay, it was possible something could do.
That's true, right?
You
might as well shecht.
You might as well shecht it.
Yeah.
If you just kill it, then you lost
the... No, in the middle of giving birth, whatever it was,
Might as well shecht the mother, and then immediately after the shechita, you do the C-section.
Yeah.
That way, technically also, then the child also midoraisa does not require shechita.
Yeah, that's why it probably cannot be brought as a korban.
Well, it's even if the mother survives.
Because it's already shechted, so you have to shecht an animal.
That's also true, but even if the animal has a C-section and survives a C-section, then it's also not a problem. It's also not allowed to...
That doesn't make...
I hear you. Yeah. Yeah. V'char kasavti... Okay, where are we? I'm sorry. Tachas imo pratli yosom. Kilomar shenolat achar shenishchata imo. The same idea, even if it somehow managed to be extracted vaginally from the mother animal after the shechita of the mother, they just like they pull it out right away. Then, nevertheless, that would be also not allowed. It has to be alive and its mother both together in the world at the same time. Tachas imo. The most ideal way that something is born is if the mother stays alive and delivers naturally. Okay.
Also, the calf will not live without the mother a lot of times. The calf really needs the mother.
For them, yeah. That's true. V'yaser prateha, mizbarim b'sifra uvesof maseches zvachim. Okay, it's found in the Halachi Medrash on Vayikra and Maseches Zvachim. The Noheges Bizman Abayes Bizichrei Kehuna. It's not applicable to the male Kohanim who are in charge of the worship of the Beis Mikdash. If they offer up an animal below this time, then it is a problem. Kilaem Mitzvah Sakorban Valyadim Yiskarban Muzro Minadoma Binyam. Mikom Alkom Raisi the Ramazim Malbracha Shakaz Lashono. Lechena Makdish Mechusar Zman Aruke Makdish Baal Mumover Veino Loka. Kibarsha Kibosha Biarnu. And the Rambam says you're not allowed to consecrate an animal under 8 days. V'nira midvarav shehu sover shechiu mitzvazo afal Yisrael ha-makdash oso. V'cheven shekein, it's a little bit v'chidesh, it seems. V'cheven shekein, yesh lanu lomar ladaito shechiu mitzvazo, bein b'chohan and bein b'Yisrael, mizchar monikevos. This applies both to regular Jews and to Kohanim, for males and females as well. And so he's in the Gemara that way also, that there is some indication that the Rambam is correct. If you offered it up, and maybe even if you consecrated it, then that you don't receive the penalty of lashes, because it's considered to be ultimately, you have the technical status of a positive commandment and not of a negative commandment.